I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Independent foreign and documentary film critics Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler are back to tell us about the best film showing in area theaters. We'll review Bully, which, following public pressure, was dropped from an R rating to PG-13. The documentary dives into the crisis of kids hurting other kids in U.S. schools. We'll examine several films featuring complicated father-son relationships. In Footnote, both are professors, and when one gets special recognition, their complicated relationship reaches a new peak. We'll also discuss Being Flynn, which tells the story of Nick, a man who re-encounters his father, a con man and self-proclaimed poet. These and more films that make you think on Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Cyril is an 11-year-old boy who loves his dad. Problem is, Cyril's dad isn't interested at all in being a father. He opts to put the boy in an orphanage and be done with him, only Cyril isn't having it. That's a touching plot of the new critically acclaimed film, The Kid with a Bike, and it's just one of the independent foreign and documentary films we're talking about today with our film critics. And they are Cynthia Haynes, who taught film at the University of Texas at El Paso. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Steve Walker is a contributing arts reporter at KCUR.
Steve, I am, and I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you, too. And Bob Butler is a longtime movie reviewer for The Star. He now blogs at butlerscinemascene.com, and he works at the Kansas City Public Library.
It's not really work.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's fun, which is the way it's supposed to be, right?
Right.
Well, let's begin with the film Bully, which I guess along with The Hunger Games is the most talked about film of the year so far. Steve, can a film like this really change behavior out there, or what do you think?
That's a good question. A better film could. But seriously, the movie is important. It follows three students who are bullied. It lives in Iowa, and I don't remember where the other two live. And it also follows the trajectory of two families whose sons took their own lives after a series of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds potentially wrenching, gut-wrenching.
I
think we're going to get into why the film doesn't really work, and it didn't really move me. And I've worked with teenagers and done bullying programs a long time. And so I was expecting to just be, you know, a puddle by the end of this film.
How could a film like this not move people?
I'll tell you a couple reasons. And then Bob and Cynthia can chime in. The movie, while the bullying that we see is tough and the stories are awful, the film director didn't have the chops to offer any substantive lessons or programs or
insight, even.
Insight. It ends with a candlelight vigil, and while that's all well and good, you're left with these two families who've lost children. And the administrators, the other reason this is true is that the administrators that we see in the schools are in over their heads, if not completely inept and in the wrong professions. They do not know how to handle this, and schools all over the country would say the same thing. We, for example, if I can...
How can that be years of attention on this issue, Steve?
Real quick, I'm not going to name names, but I was consulting with the school district, and the subject of bullying came up, and I said, if you're going to address bullying, you have to address lesbian and gay teenagers in the schools, whether it's middle school or high school, because they are getting bullied more than any other kids. And this administrator said to me, we're not ready to go there. And there were several people at the table who, after the meeting, said, when will that time be then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just, they're afraid. This issue terrifies them. Meanwhile, kids get up every morning wondering if they're going to make it through first hour.
Wait a minute. The administrators are afraid. Afraid of what?
They're afraid of a vocal minority saying, by addressing gay and lesbian teenagers, you are somehow creating some kind of mood and setting some agenda. What this movie does very well is, and we're going to hear a clip from a girl named Kelby, maybe not right now, but who is a lesbian in her small high school in small town America, and the daily grind she has to go through. People are nervous about that issue.
Well, I should point out here that it isn't. We're not just talking about gay and lesbian youth. We're talking
not
about
at all.
There are kids that just look funny and are getting pounded left and right.
And this is nothing new, though, Bob. This has been going on forever.
And that's the excuse administrators give. Kids are like this. This is the way it is. I was bullied.
I'm not bullies. I'm just making that point.
And in fact, one of the curious things about this film is that you never get into the minds of the bulliers. In fact, they're really not allowed to say anything except what the quote-unquote candid camera picks up.
Mm-hmm.
It's the administrators who become the villains here. Because they either willingly ignore, blithely turn away, or they're actually complicit in it.
Well, that's really distressing, again, because of what I said a minute ago, given the amount of attention this issue has received going back 5, 10, 15 years, it's amazing to me, Cynthia.
The reason we're talking about this is because Harvey Weinstein, who bought the documentary, has been fighting with the Motion Picture Association about the rating for this film because – and I agree. It should be seen by everyone, by teenagers and their parents and school administrators. You know, it might shed a little more light on the subject. You know, maybe some light bulbs would go off and people would become a bit more sensitive to how to deal with this issue. But mm-hmm. Harvey Weinstein's out there selling this movie. He's mm-hmm. marketing it because he's bullying the Motion Picture Association to change the rating, or he did, from an R to a PG-13.
Right, and that's what happened.
And he said
it needed to happen.
And he said he wasn't going to edit it and make any changes, and he did. Mm-hmm. You know, but he was on NPR a couple of days ago. Harvey Weinstein, one of the most powerful men in Hollywood, and he truly is, because he changed the face of independent filmmaking. And he's been a genius in marketing his films, getting Shakespeare in Love an Oscar for Best Picture, which, you know, no one else on the planet could have done but Harvey Weinstein. So, I mean, it's amusing to me that he's making such a show about this in order to get people into movie theaters to see this film.
I believe that he really believes this issue is important,
I agree.
Too.
No,
anyone
I agree.
With a heart has to.
I agree. But there are other films, Steve, don't you agree, that are better than this, that deal with the subject?
Yes.
And I agree with Bob about what about some insight into who these bullies are? What's their story?
Well, it sounds like the three of you are saying this is an incredible missed opportunity.
Yes.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Very
yes.
well put.
It's
Absolutely.
It's a classic yes-but movie. Yes, it's important, but boy, I wish they'd done a better job.
Can we play the clip and then so we can give audiences
Steve, set it up again for
us. Some people may find some language in here objectionable, but this is one of the girls that the documentary crew followed. Her name's Kelby. She's an out lesbian at her high school.
From Bully.
They made it very clear that I wasn't welcomed at the school. When I opened my locker, there was a note that said, "Faggots aren't welcomed here." The teacher was calling roll and said boys, and then he said girls, and then paused and said Kelby. And another teacher told me how they burned fags and kept talking about it with me in the classroom, and everyone was laughing. And they knew it was hurting me, and they kept going.
As faulty as we find the film, the three of us, codger
film
critics.
That we are, yes.
No, absolutely. Parents should take their children of at least, you know, middle school age and sit and talk about it afterwards, go get ice cream, whatever. It's very important. It's just, like you said, a missed opportunity.
If by any chance anyone out there has seen this film already and wants to give us a quick call, we want to hear from you. 816-235-2888. Send us an email, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page.
The reason the film was rated R is because of the use of the F word. Like, that's never been heard on a high school.
Yeah,
big surprise.
Oh, geez.
But there's a scene on a bus where a guy gets particularly violent with one of the victims. And one of the points I want to make is that there was a filmmaker there with a camera filming this. And so the bully, was he playing to the camera? Was he you know, being more dramatic because there was someone recording this? So this has been a conversation, as long as there have been documentaries as we know them, as to the effect that the filmmaker has on the events that the filmmaker is filming.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to my original question. Can a film like this, is there any history in Hollywood of films like these, you know, changing behavior, changing the actions that Steve
Errol Morris's documentary, The Thin Blue Line, pretty much was just on the cutting edge of DNA evidence for people in prison for life or on death row. That would be the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah, it absolutely kept a man from dying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else?
Well,
what else?
But wasn't there also another film you mentioned earlier, Steve, about dealing with bullying that you thought was better?
At True False, there's a movie I saw called A Day at the Zoo, which is, if people remember that video that went viral of the kid in small town America who's told the world to leave Britney alone, and he's going into this tirade about leave Britney alone.
Mm-hmm.
Which was all funny and well and good at the time. This documentary, A Day at the Zoo, I hope it comes to Kansas City, kind of follows his story. And when you see that Leave Britney Alone clip, when there was 1,000 people in the audience, you could hear a pin drop. It wasn't funny anymore. Put in the context of this kid's horrible life as a victim of bullying.
Well, this is interesting to me, though. I'm asking this question, can movies like this change behavior? And the three of you who have seen hundreds of movies are having trouble coming up with many examples.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that movies are the beginning of anything. If anything, they are a recording of it, a follow-up to it. Many a producer will say, you know, movies don't set the direction. They tell you what direction everybody's already going in.
Right, and that they're more of a mirror that reflects what's going on in society than really affecting society.
Well, why is that, though? I mean, why isn't Hollywood always seen as sort of cutting edge and trendy? Why isn't Hollywood occasionally ahead of the curve?
Because it takes so long to make a film. I mean, I don't know anything that's been, you know, it takes a year, 2 years, 3 years for a feature film to get made.
But even when it comes to civil rights, you know, gay, lesbian integration into society, we're not getting any nominees here?
Yeah, let me put it this way. I suspect that when it comes to gay, lesbian relations, a TV series like Will and Grace probably did more than all the documentaries in the world.
Right. Well, okay. Yeah, because of the numbers, for sure. Yeah. But then a movie like Milk does so well, and Sean Penn wins a second Oscar. A lot of people saw that movie who had never heard of Harvey Milk or George Moscone or knew anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are little, you know, ways of advancing civil rights and social justice.
Well, you know, we want to talk about food issues. You know, we're all so sensitive about, you know, how our food is grown. And so Food Inc. came out. Well, again, just like Bob said, it's, you know, it's sort of following this trend in the United States to become more sensitive about how we eat.
As much of a fan of Michael Moore as I am, which Cynthia is not so much, I don't think any of his movies, as entertaining as they are, have really
changed anything.
Look at Bowling for Columbine.
He did get Walmart to take bullets out of out of some stores, yeah.
Some stores.
Well, if our listeners can think of a film that was on the cutting edge of a social issue and ended up bringing change to a problem, 816-235-2888. We'll talk about your recommendations as we move through our hour here today. How about another film that's already open? It is titled, Cynthia, Footnote.
This is a film that was nominated for the 2012 Best Foreign Film Oscar. It's from Israel. It was directed by Joseph Seder. It is a modern Jewish fable about two Talmudic scholars, a father and a son, and it addresses all kinds of issues in contemporary Israel and in the world today. The father is a professor and a philologist who labors in obscurity studying the Torah. And from what I understand, and what's interesting about watching this film is that you learn a lot about Jewish history, Jewish culture, by following these lives of these two men. It's deceptively simple, but it turns out it's a parody. It's a satire about this world where we look at the surface of issues, popular culture that's reflected in the son, who is a more well-renowned scholar, although the father resents him terribly because the father is a more traditional scholar,
mm-hmm.
a more orthodox man. And so he resents his son. There's an issue that actually happened to the filmmaker when, in fact, his father was given an award. And as it turns out, the award was really meant for the son. So this film itself turns on that. It's very slow. These are two individuals that you really don't have a lot of respect for. I mean, it's very difficult to get close to these characters and really care about them. But if you step back and you realize what issues they're dealing with, and it's about father-son relationships, about ego, about envy, I thought it was a fascinating film.
Critics are giving this very high marks.
They are.
Yeah. Anybody else see it?
Sorry. I have to take a vow of silence, that's all I'll say, because I didn't see the whole thing.
Thank you, Steve.
But you weren't impressed with what you saw.
I didn't see the whole thing.
Okay. Is there a reason for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Out of respect to the company that sets up these screenings for us, I'll just say that I didn't stay for the whole thing.
Okay. Let's go to some phone calls. We were talking just a few minutes ago about films that are on the cutting edge of social issues. Let's go to some calls here. Phil from Lawrence. Phil, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
You were talking about films that change behavior. I don't know if it's a sweeping change, but I saw a film, and I'm struggling to come up with the name of it. It was about the banking industry, and it made me change my account from a large conglomerate bank to a small regional bank.
Was it a documentary? Okay. The Enron movie, maybe, or no?
No. It was specifically about the banking industry.
I know what you're talking about, and I can't remember. It came out about 3 years ago.
Yeah. Another film I think changed people's behavior was, or at least way of looking at the world, was Al Gore's film. I mean, I think that was an important film about a global climate change.
Yeah.
And I think people may have changed their habits when they saw Super Size, which I thought was a pretty devastating film about the way we eat. And there's been lots of films about organic growing and small, local, being a local vore. So, I mean, I think documentaries might not change the world, but they can change a few people's opinion.
Well, Phil, you came up with some great recommendations. I got to get you here on our panel here every 3 weeks. Did a great job.
I agree. He's saying, I think, that films can certainly open your eyes to issues and worlds you've never seen, which is why all of us on this panel love foreign films so much,
right.
You get to see so much more of the world.
Right.
Absolutely. And I enjoy your show very much.
Yeah, so. Phil, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Don from Kansas City, Missouri. Don, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think the one that probably, well, a couple. One was The Snake Pit with Olivia de Havilland. That changed all of the mental institutions in the United States.
You're right about that. It was an incendiary movie, wildly melodramatic, and yet it reflected the real ugly reality of a lot of mental institutions up through about 1960.
Yeah, so, she was put in one.
But,
yeah.
Okay, go ahead. One thing I really disagree with is that films do not have an influence on us. For example, after World War II, the McCarthy era was not about communism. It was about controlling the film industry. And one of the top people on the list was Eli Kazan. But they went to him and they said, well, look, if you get Marlon Brando to do Viva Zapata, which is a film that the government kind of came up with, then they would let him off. And the theme to that movie is, no matter how bad your culture is or your government is, if you band together the peasants and take over the government, what comes in place of it is worse than what you had before. And that same theme is run five or six times a year in our country. And it's a propaganda to keep people immobilized. And I grew up in the film industry, and Hollywood's not a bunch of healthy people, making.
I'm glad you brought up that word propaganda, because that's something else that. We can address when we talk about documentary films. It's a point of view. And you talk about Inconvenient Truth. I'm not arguing with you. I think you've made some good points. But, when we talk about Inconvenient Truth, there are people, who dispel a lot of the things that were addressed by Al Gore in that film.
Mm-hmm.
There are other points of view. And we're not saying that necessarily that the one we see up that makes it up there on the screen. Like you said, there are a lot of things going on behind the scenes in order for those films to get made or not be made.
Ultimately, film and media is the church of today, and that's what sways the masses. And, of course, there's different, things that you watch that that you participate in, whether it's conservative or liberal or whatever. But without a doubt, that's where people learn what's hip next, kind of what's going on. That's what, in the old days before media, that you'd go to your church on the weekend and find out what was going on in the area or whatever. That was your link to the world. Now it's a perverted system of films, and, well, the media is just a complete joke now as far as there's no news. It's just all entertainment.
Well, Don, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it. Cassie from Overland Park writes, a documentary about the banking industry, Inside Job?
Yeah. Yes, that was, there you go. Very good.
Mike from Lawrence suggests Boys in the Hood, which opened our eyes to circumstances of the inner city.
But did it change anything? That's the question.
Okay. Let's go to Mary from Kansas City, Missouri. Mary, you're on the program. Good morning.
Hi. First of all, I'm not sure that there's any way to measure how much effect a movie has had, but I just think some movies, you know, they have to have had an effect by the way they made you individually feel. And one would be, I think it's called The Philadelphia Story, the Tom Hanks movie where he has
just Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, anybody who, when that came out, who still kind of wondered about AIDS, boy, if that movie wouldn't make you sympathetic to anyone who had AIDS.
Yeah,
and then going way back, To Kill a Mockingbird.
I was just thinking of that one, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah. I just saw that again the other night and thought, oh, my gosh, that's so moving. And anybody with an ounce of prejudice in them, how could they see that and not question some of their prejudices?
Right. Mary, thank you for the good call. I appreciate it. Yeah. Bye-bye. Good suggestions, eh? Okay, let's go to Eric from Overland Park. Eric, nice to have you.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just have a question. I was listening to that last caller, and the woman panelist made the comment about documentaries being points of view. And my wife and I love watching documentaries, and we've seen a lot that have changed the way we live, just mostly about food, but we watch these scathing documentaries and they're done and we just say, well, that's only one side of the story. And so we want to know about the other half or the other side of the story or the rebuttal or another point of view on it. And I just didn't know if there's like a blog or a website or something that you can go to that says like, oh, well, this is Food Inc. from another perspective. This is Food Inc. that point from another perspective, I guess.
Yeah, Eric, that's a very intelligent way to go about watching documentary films. I mean, I've done the same thing, and I don't know of a particular site that you could go to, but it's almost the same thing that reporters do when a presidential candidate makes points or arguments, and then they'll go back and do research and say, wait a minute, you know, what you just said really isn't true. And I think that what comes to mind to me most frequently when that subject comes up is Inconvenient Truth, where in fact so many of those facts were dispelled. But, you know, I'm not saying it, you know, shouldn't have been made or was.
Well, Eric, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay. More recommendations coming in here. Let's move on to one other film here that's already opened. It's In the Family, Bob Butler.
Opens today.
Okay.
Opens today.
At the Tivoli.
Mm-hmm. I did not expect anything from this movie, and it blew me away. Now, if I describe to you what the setup is, it's about a couple, two men. One of them has a son. They're raising the son together. The biological father dies. The other man would like to stay with the son, but the deceased did not update his will. Mm. So the boy's other family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, are actually in charge of the estate. And the surviving partner has no claim on this child whatsoever, despite having served as his parent for several years. Now, this sounds like it's going to be a gay Kramer versus Kramer. And in plot, yeah, okay, it is. But the filmmaker, Patrick Wang, who wrote it, directed it, and plays the surviving partner, has done such an unbelievable job, in my opinion, of taking what could be a overwhelmingly melodramatic situation, and instead of exploring, you know, the big dramatic moments, he's exploring the little moments between, the way people live their lives. I would say there's not even a villain here, not even the aunt who's the executor of the estate and snatches the kid away, because her feeling is, I'm legally in charge of this kid. He's going to be confused. How do we handle this? Mm-hmm. And there are moments there where people are clearly bringing up, you know, the gay issue, but I don't think it's a movie about that. I think it's a movie about families and about parent-child love. And this guy, he reminds me a little bit of a French filmmaker like Bresson, someone who doesn't do big, you know, dramatic booming, and it's all in the little moments. And in fact, even his cinematography, a lot of things happen just out of range of the film. What you're seeing is okay, but what's happening on the edges is sometimes more important. I think this could be a major debut by somebody who potentially could be pretty big stuff.
Interesting.
I would hope so, Bob, but I found, as I find with other movies that are written, produced, directed, and starring one person, that there's no one there to say, enough, this scene is going on for 8 minutes. It needs to be 2 minutes.
And
this movie is 2 hours
Steve,
and 45 minutes long.
It is too long.
Tedious. Wow. And I just found the acting really amateurish,
you know,
and shoddy.
You know, I didn't. I found it to be believable in a way that a lot of Hollywood movies simply aren't believable.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
No, I was frustrated, too, with the fact that, he did not have an objective person standing over his shoulder and saying, Patrick, this goes on too long. Patrick, this needs to be eliminated. You need to tighten it up. And this might be a story that might affect people's, you know, decisions about getting wills. It may make a difference. But more power to Patrick. I mean, he had an idea. It's a great subject for a film. I just don't think he executed it all that
well.
He's
a local guy, right?
No, I don't think so.
No? Oh, okay. He's in town this weekend,
yeah,
though.
He was in town. Ah. He showed the film, and now I think he's in New York.
Oh, okay.
No, actually, he's here. He's going to attend the 6:30 showing this evening at the Tivoli.
Oh, awesome.
There you go. What's the clip here we got here?
Well, this is the one partner has been hurt in an auto accident, and the Joey, the other one, has shown up at the hospital to see what's going on.
From In the Family.
Mr. Roby, Mrs. Hines, if you like, you can see Mr. Hines now. He's not conscious, but you can sit with him for a few minutes if you like.
Yes, I'd like that. Yes.
This way, Mrs. Hines. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Williams. Only family members allowed to visit at this time.
Oh. So, I can't see him. I mean, we're a family.
Sorry, Mr. Williams.
No, Joey.
No, it's okay. Chip, go with Grandma Sally, okay?
Oh, boy, go.
Chip.
Yeah, I didn't believe it for a minute. I felt like this was an agenda movie, and the actors were mouthing parts of Patrick Wang's agenda. I just didn't buy it, Bob.
No,
would a nurse really stop someone in this day and age that from going in?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
They can, really? But as blatantly as it's done in this film, I found it completely unbelievable.
That happens, Cynthia?
Yes.
Yeah, no, it does.
It does. It really does.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about some of the latest and best independent foreign and documentary films now showing. We'll get a phone call from Angela, and we'll turn our attention after the break to the film Kid with a Bike. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's discussion with Lee Woodruff, and I just loved her, you'll find that plus the weekend to-do list at kcur.org. Monday on the program, a conversation with author John Grisham. Also next week, we talk with the National Geographic photographer Matthias Klum. He speaks at 7:30 Monday evening at the Kauffman Center. That's a very fine photographer, a National Geographic photographer, Matthias Klum. Well, this hour, we're talking about the latest art, independent, and foreign films with Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Let's go to Angela here from Prairie Village. And Angela, thank you for holding on. I appreciate it.
Sure.
You had some thoughts about Bully.
Yeah, I wanted to make a point on the movie about the bullying.
Yes.
That I believe that even if the movie may not be that successful or to the point, I think making a point of each individual that watches that movie may change an attitude or a behavior or help another, a child change an attitude or a behavior. And that helps change the process. I mean, it's just one person at a time, but you have to start somewhere.
Angela, I think that was a point Harvey Weinstein made, too, is that he wanted everybody to see this film, kids and adults also. And if it did make a difference in the life of one or two children, then it's successful.
Oh, I say absolutely. You know, when I mentioned earlier I was doing some anti-bullying stuff in some schools, I remember a student who ran a anti-bullying campaign kind of workshop for the ninth grade class, mm-hmm. and he was a former bully, and he was a football jock and football star, and he sat on that stage and said, I was a bully, and I was a moron, and I still feel bad about it to this day. You know, things like that are pretty impactful, too.
Yeah, okay. Angela, thank you for the phone call. Let's turn to one other film that's gotten a lot of buzz. It's Kid with a Bike, Steve
Wonderful
Walker.
Wonderful movie.
Jean-Pierre and Luc Dardenne are two brothers from Paris who – no, they're Belgium.
Belgian, I'm sorry.
Who make wonderful, gritty movies about people who live on the fringes of society. And this film is another great one from them. It's about a kid who's at a boarding school rather than an orphanage.
It's sort of a state institution.
Yeah. It's whether it's juvie or what. But he insists – his dad is wonderful and going to rescue him and bring his bike, and things just unfold, and dad wants nothing to do with him. Dad, in fact, has sold his bike for money because he's a jack blank, you know?
Yeah.
And so this kid runs away. They find him in the lobby of some doctor's office where he wraps his arms around the legs of this woman who just happens to be sitting there for an appointment, and in no short order says, can you please take me home? And so this woman, even she's unsure why she's doing it, comes back a week later or so, brings him a bike, and says, can I take him on weekends? There's something here.
You know, if Hollywood had a crack at this, it would have been like wading through molasses.
These guys are
kind of terse. They
I love their movies.
They never jerk an emotion, but their reticence is what gets you in the end, what overwhelms you.
And deals with the subject of a child's love for a parent, no matter how abusive, and the sense of desperation of being abandoned. And it's so beautifully addressed. And this young actor who stars in the film.
Thomas Duray
is incredible.
Incredible.
I think about 400 Blows, the young child actor in that. Casting is the key, especially when it comes to kids, and these guys had it right.
You know, it's interesting because the woman who takes him in is played by Cécile de France, who is the star of Clint Eastwood's Hereafter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's an actress who's a major star, and yet she plays this. She's a hairdresser, and there's nothing actorly about her in this. In fact, you look at her and you go, do I know this actress?
Right.
She's beautiful. She's a beautiful woman.
But it isn't an actorly performance in the least.
This kid's almost feral, too. He's self-abusive. He smacks her once, and she continues to love him in the way that they've established this relationship. One inside thing about the Dardenne brothers, they've had this French actor, Jeremy Renier, in almost all of their films from when he was 17. He's been in almost every one of their movies, and here he's playing this deadbeat dad, and it's just interesting to have watched his career with these filmmakers.
Well, a few films ago, he played a teenage father who tried to sell his own baby.
Right, The Child.
So, yeah.
That's
great
a good story.
Movie. Oh,
that's
a wonderful movie.
So
these movies are heartbreaking and tough, but there's a lot of heart in them.
About something.
Yep, there you go.
We finally have some agreement.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All three of you like Kid with a Bike, so go see that. Will that one be on your three to see by the end of the show?
It's on mine.
Yes. Okay. Kid with a Bike, a very strong recommendation there. Bob Butler, let's turn to Chico and Rita.
Well,
it left town.
It's
it left
gone,
town, so
yeah.
let's not waste
let's
time
not
on
Let's not waste
it.
Any time on Chico and Rita. Let's go to The Raid, Steve Walker.
Real briefly, The Raid, Redemption, comes from Indonesia. It's about an apartment tower run like a dictatorship by a drug lord who lives on the penthouse floor. And it's kind of a chop-socky kind of movie. It's a fight movie. It's a ultra-violent film. One of our fellow critics, Shannon Hood, was at the screening. She said, what are you doing here at this movie? And I had heard good things about it. It's not my kind of film, but I have to say, for what it is, the fights are incredibly choreographed and staged. We're talking about fights between floors, and between walls.
Yeah. You think you've seen it before, or in a Jackie Chan movie? You have not
no,
seen
no,
it.
No, no, no. This
one.
Is takes well it to done for what
but
it is. It's
Steve,
brutal.
It's the good cop, bad brother,
yeah.
criminal story.
Oh, did you
told.
See it?
Yeah.
Oh, you did.
Oh no, my husband and I couldn't wait to see it.
Did you like?
We went to Liberty Hall in Lawrence to see it. I refer to it as a too much action film. It was just over the top. I mean, some of those fight sequences were very well choreographed, as you said, but it just got to the point where I was numb and couldn't wait for the movie to be over.
Couldn't do it anymore.
Not even you could get chopped 85 times and still be standing.
Okay. I get your drift. That's the Raid Redemption and maybe sort of so-so review there. How about Cynthia Haynes' Delicacy?
Well, one of my favorite actresses is Audrey Tautou, who was in Amelie, one of my favorite
yes.
movies of all time in 2001.
I very much agree with that.
She
second
is
that
absolutely lovely to look at. This is a cream puff of a movie. She plays a young woman who's dealing with grief and winds up in an office romance with a dorky fellow from Sweden. And it really tries to address from a woman's point of view, a sense of loss in these various stages that you go through. It was based on a novel by David Bjornkinos, who directed the film along with his brother. And I think they just didn't maybe have enough distance from the novel to make this a very, very interesting film. It's just too lightweight for her. And it was a bit disappointing, but I thought it was interesting to look at a man who does become sensitive to how a woman feels dealing with grief.
Did it address at all the fact that she's so beautiful and that people were commenting on you're dating somebody who's way out of your league or
all the time,
you? Oh,
all
okay.
the time, all the time. And she also had to deal with a boss, a lecherous boss. And mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting to see how they do that in France.
Mm-hmm.
So for a variety of different reasons, I enjoyed it, but don't expect a particularly profound film.
Okay. So Steve, you liked it?
I didn't see it.
Okay. Amelie. Very famous film. I go see it with my friends, the Petersons, my
really?
Wife and I, every Valentine's Day downtown at Screenland.
How appropriate.
Yes. That film just sort of lives on, doesn't it?
It does. And it's so – I don't want to sound silly here. I refer to it as cinematic. But, you
oh,
know,
it is.
All of
oh,
those
gosh.
Magical little film moments of fantasy and things that happen. In the music, everything about it worked.
And his next film, I believe, was with Audrey Tautou as well. And one of my favorites is A Very Long Engagement. Talk mm-hmm. about cinematic.
And that's good,
yeah.
too?
Oh, yeah. Very good. Yeah.
Boy, I'm impressed, Steve. That's very romantic.
Well, yeah. We just have a good time with that every year. Okay. Next up, then, is Being Flynn, Steve.
Being Flynn, briefly, based on Nick Flynn's memoir, Another Bull Blank Night in Suck City. He was interviewed on NPR a couple weeks ago. He grew up wanting to be a writer, and he was working in a homeless shelter. And one night, his estranged father, played by Robert De Niro here, comes into the shelter. Nick's character is played by Paul Dano. So it's a father-son film, not unlike Footnote, perhaps, although De Niro's character is he overacts, I have to say. I've been
really?
A De Niro fan for years.
The
but
great
this,
De Niro
this,
makes
the great
a mistake.
Oh, yeah, well, little fuckers, okay?
Yeah.
But anyway, De Niro's alcoholic, homophobic, racist, dirty, just very unpleasant,
mm-hmm.
and hasn't been around since his kid was a baby. In flashbacks, his mom's played by Julianne Moore, which was a nice, bright bit of sunshine from the otherwise vat of wino puke that this movie is. So the kid becomes a drug addict, too, and it's like father, like son. Oh, really? And then it ends up in a nice little Hallmark moment.
Hmm.
Well, I can't recommend it at all.
Ah, too bad.
Apparently, he was in costume with a beard, and, I mean, he was living on the street,
oh,
right? The character
the
was?
The character was, yeah.
Yeah, he went into his own hotel. He owns a very nice hotel in Tribeca,
uh-huh.
and the security approached him and forced him out, and they didn't realize that they were dealing with the
he
guy
bad.
Who owns the building.
Yeah.
So thought that
Paul,
was cute.
Paul Dano has no screen presence at all enough to carry a much less carry a movie. And De Niro just overacts out the yin-yang. So.
Robert De Niro overacts.
I think so.
And it's only showing at one movie theater in town, and you would think a De Niro movie would get a wide release if it were good. So
you'd think. It's
you
not.
Think,
yeah, I took a
think.
Bullet for the team.
Thank
we, have
you.
A, we have a clip here, don't we?
We do.
That was my information. That's what I'm working
I'm
with
here.
I'm
very apologetic. I have no idea what it's about.
Well, let's just listen to it, okay. And we'll figure it out, and we'll learn together.
That was my first wife, Jody.
I know who it is. She was my mother.
I know she was your mother. She was the most beautiful woman in the world. She was the love of my life. She was the light of my love. I know if she was still alive today, we'd be together. Such a tragic accident.
What accident?
What accident? The accident that cut her life short.
Wasn't an accident. She left a note.
Did it mention me?
No.
Yeah, not much of a letter writer, your mother.
This is a comedy, right?
It's so bleak and grim. And you just kind of want to take a bath. And then this ending in this Hallmark moment of, you know, they're really going to get along after all. That's great.
Well, if you are just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking about the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing on area screens with Steve Walker, Cynthia Haynes, and Bob Butler. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. If you've seen any of these films and want to chime in here, it'd be great to have you. Bob Butler.
Well, let's talk about Jiro Dreams of Sushi, a mouthwatering documentary from a guy named David Gelb. Jiro Ono is an 85-year-old man who runs a sushi restaurant in the basement of a Tokyo office building adjacent to a subway station. It looks like a diner. You have to sit at a counter to eat, only seats like 11 people, but it'll cost you $400 a meal. Jiro has been making sushi for 70 years. He probably dreams of it, which is where the title comes from.
And it's a documentary?
It is a documentary. Mm-hmm. It's about a man who has devoted his entire life, almost apparently to the exclusion of everything else, to perfecting the art of sushi.
And I'd say, Bob, it's about a man who's devoted his life to excellence.
Okay. And you know what? In a way, he has sort of a Zen approach to what he does. He's not a big demonstrative person. You've learned very little about his life aside from the two sons who are also in the sushi business. At one point, he visits his parents' graves and in a sort of obligatory fashion lays a wreath on it and then says they never did much for him.
He was kicked out of his home at 9.
Yeah.
So it kind of follows his life. He hung out outside of restaurants.
But think of the great food films you have seen, the ones like a Big Night or Babette's Feast, where you watch them prepare the food.
Like Water for Chocolate.
Yes,
it comes
across the screen and your stomach's going, oh, my God. I got to tell you, I'm a little dubious about raw eel, but after seeing this movie, wow. There are guys there who are apprentices. They spend 10 years folding hot towels before they even let them hold a knife. That's how serious these guys are about sushi.
It was fascinating. I don't like sushi particularly, but it's a fascinating movie about excellence, about the father and the sons, and how can you ever live up to a man who's this famous. And the apprentices also do things like massage an octopus for 45 minutes.
Yes, to make the flesh nice and tender. Yeah.
Jiro has his own tuna vendor at this huge, beautifully shot fish market in Tokyo. And he will sell to no one else, and Jiro will buy tuna from no one else. It's a fascinating movie.
Also the son story, the pressure, as you mentioned, that's on him to carry on the tradition. And you could replace the occupation with just about any other occupation involving family, I think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the first line of the movie is, what defines deliciousness?
Well, what a great idea for a documentary. What a terrific
it's
idea.
Very
and it works
well done.
And well done, yes.
And it's Jiro.
Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
It's playing only at the Screenland in the Crossroads.
And three thumbs up here for that one again. Yeah, Bob.
Now, I got one I want to mention. Another documentary we're running, coming out of our ears. This is a Disney wildlife documentary called Chimpanzee. Now, I'm going to take you back 70 years to after World War II when Walt Disney began making nature documentaries. And the critics said, great photography, great footage, but you're making these animals, you're treating them as if they're people. You're ascribing emotions to them. You're ascribing, you know, thoughts to them. You're giving them names on the screen.
And you're staging it. And you're staging these scenes.
Okay, so now we come to Chimpanzee, which is the result of several people, the directors are named Alistair Fothergill and Mark Linfield, spending years in the Ugandan jungle shooting chimpanzees with a camera, not with a gun, obviously. And they have come up with this, some fantastic stuff. Here's the problem. They name the chimpanzees, and then they have Tim Allen, God help us, do the narration. So there's a cutesy factor off the wall. Here's an example of what they do. You've got this little baby chimp. They call him Oscar. And Oscar's clan is in a perpetual fight for territory with another bunch of chimpanzees from over the mountain. Well, Oscar's group is known as a group, but the narration calls the other chimpanzees a gang. Now, what does that tell you?
It sounds like West Side Story. Exactly.
Now, toward the end of the movie, Oscar is orphaned. This is not Bambi Redux, but anyway, Oscar is orphaned and he's going to die of starvation. And apparently something amazing did happen. The alpha male of his group adopted him and started treating him as if he was a mother rather than the alpha male. And they've got footage of this. But by the time this wonderful thing happens, I was so dubious about the way I'm being jerked around here that it didn't matter to me. So all the beautiful photography in the world doesn't mean anything if you don't believe the honesty of the people who've made the movie.
Maybe his name should be changed from Oscar to Golden Globe or something like that.
The name of that film again, Bob, is what?
It's Chimpanzee.
Chimpanzee, okay. Steve Walker, how about the UAW documentary about you wanted to talk about?
I'm going to defer to Cynthia.
I really would like to plug this film. It's called Brothers on the Line. It's a documentary film by Sasha Ruther. It is narrated by Martin Sheen, and it is a wonderful historical study of the unions, and in particular the Ruther family and their involvement with United Auto Workers. Writer, producer, director Sasha Ruther, the grandson of Victor Ruther, will lead a panel discussion following a screening tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock, Stack Auditorium, Royal Hall at UMKC. It's free, free admission, convenient parking. I encourage anybody who has the time and the interest. It's a very important part of American history that was never told in school when I went to school. It.
And the archival footage this kid has of his grandfather hobnobbing with JFK, with Cesar Chavez, with Martin Luther King, and you're like, wow.
Major players.
This was a whole other era in our lives that we were sort of around for, but we were too young to really remember.
Right.
Me and my friends at the library, folks, want to plug something coming up. May Day. That was the day, you know, when the Russians pulled on their high boots and goose-stepped through Red Square. This May Day, we are celebrating with a screening at the Plaza Library of Battleship Potemkin with live music from the People's Liberation Big Band. 12 musicians up there playing away.
Oh,
it's going to be awesome. This, of course, is Sergei Eisenstein's great silent film, which has been parodied by so many other great filmmakers that it's, you know, you could make a list a mile long of the people who have done Odessa Steps.
Oh, yeah. Untouchables. Brian De Palma comes to mind first. Yeah.
Anyway, that's going to be May 1st, 6:30 at the Plaza Library. You can reserve at the kclibrary.org website. It's going to be cool. And then we're all going to grab pitchforks and march on the Board of Trade building.
With a stop at Bowling's.
Right on.
Want to mention that the Kansas City Women in Film and TV, in conjunction with the Independent Film Coalition, will present a film editing seminar with Philip Neal. And that's coming up on today from 1:30 to 6 and Saturday from 8 to 10. And it will be at the UMKC's Royal Hall, room 402. Sounds very interesting. I think a lot of filmmakers we talked about today would benefit from going to an event like this.
Stephen?
And my plug is the fact that the Tribeca Film Festival, which is De Niro co-founded, opened in New York yesterday, but here in Kansas City or anywhere within a computer, they have 6 features online. They're free. I've watched one of them. It's kind of like a train spotting set in Glasgow in the 70s. Plus a whole bunch of short films, docs. There's a new film by Neil LaBute that's about 8 minutes long. All you have to do is register, and you can watch them. They come online every other day or so. There's a new one. Monday, there's a new documentary about high school wrestling called On the Mat. And so I've been having fun looking at what's going on at the Tribeca Film Festival from my house in Kansas City. So.
How comfortable that is. And how about the KIFF Extra?
I think Bob had something else to talk about as far as the library goes.
Next month in May, we're going to be showing on Monday nights at 6:30 and Saturdays at 1:30 in the Film Vault, A Little Magic, a series of films by Vincent Minnelli. He was one of Hollywood's great directors of musicals, and we're featuring Meet Me in St. Louis, The Bandwagon, An American in Paris. But he also did stuff you might not remember, like The Father of the Bride, The Bad and the Beautiful, one of the great movies ever made about Hollywood,
yeah.
Lust for Life, the Vincent Van Gogh story, and Some Came Running with Shirley MacLaine and Frank Sinatra. It's almost a Douglas Sirk look at small town life.
We just have a few seconds left. How about your three to see, your three top recommendations of independent foreign and documentary films you recommend, Steve Walker?
I'm going to change it at the last minute from what I said a half hour ago. Jiro Dreams of Sushi, I'd recommend. Mm-hmm. The Kid with a Bike. And if teenagers and their parents go together, I'm going to say go see Bully, as long as you have a discussion about it.
Okay.
Kid with a Bike, Women on the Sixth Floor, Brothers on the Line.
Okay. In the Family, A Separation, and In Darkness.
I think there's nine films for you right there.
Yeah, we're all over the place. Hey, thank you all very much
thank
for coming
you.
In today. That's Steve Walker, Cynthia Haynes, and Bob Butler. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Monday in the program, a conversation with acclaimed author John Grisham. Also next week, we talk with National Geographic photographer Matthias Klum. He speaks at 7:30 Monday evening at the Kauffman Center. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Kathleen Pointer, Danny Alexander, Maria Carter, and Kim Noble. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of a Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.